God. What I teach is utter nonsense. Gobbledygook. It has no meaning. Except to myself. I have no teaching. It is simply my confession. It's useless for most people because I'm not giving you direction. I'm not telling you to meditate 12 hours a day or to stand on your head or to utter mantras. There's no instruction. There's just my personal confession, the way that I feel. Now, it does some people good for this invisible instruction by just being here, by just opening your heart. Something happens. So don't listen with your head. Do not try to analyze or judge or come to any conclusions. As I always say, do not even believe a word I say. Why should you? Who am I? I'm nobody. Nobody important. Listen to your own heart. I'm sort of a mirror. What you see in me is yourself. Subsequently, the way you feel about yourself is the way you feel about me. Because you're looking into the mirror. I can truthfully say that I am ultimate oneness, absolute reality, emptiness, unborn. Nirvana. I am that I am. When many people read spiritual books on Advaita Vedanta or on Yanamaka, they immediately try to act out the part. And they memorize many of these quotations and sayings. They become useless. You have to go through spiritual disciplines to get to the place where you wake up. In my own experience, I probably did these disciplines in a previous existence. For when I was very young, I felt these things. I had no idea what it was until I read the books. So reading of books confirmed my experience. And then I went to see Ramana Maharshi. But I have already felt this. There's a difference. I've got to be very careful what I say. Because this path sometimes gives people license to become arrogant, obnoxious, rude, It's just the opposite. If you really have jnana, knowledge, you show loving kindness, mercy, compassion, joy. And you express yourself as that. Many of us believe in a cause. In metaphysics, we learn there's a cause for everything. And even on the path of Yanamarga, we say there's a substratum. But that's just to explain that there's an underlying power. But in truth, I tell you, there's no substratum, there's no cause. There isn't any cause for anything. If there's no cause, there's no effect. What I am saying is simply this. You're always looking for a reason for why you are like you are, why you have these habits, why you look and appear to be this way, why you're kind or why you're mean. You're always looking for a reason, a solution, a cause. But there is no reason. There is no cause. There's no effect. There's emptiness. Emptiness is the self. And I am that. Now when I speak of I am not referring to Robert. I am referring to omnipresence. I am is that. Therefore, when I utter I am, I'm speaking for all of us. For there's only one. Ultimate oneness. And we are all ultimate oneness. There's no distinction. People ask me strange questions. It's strange to me, but not to them, I guess. For instance, somebody asked me this week, how come all the great sages died of disease? Not all of them, but some of them. Like Ramana died of cancer. Mr. Siddhartha died of cancer. Jesus was hung on the cross. And the question was, if these people are so great, why do they suffer so? And I can only laugh when I hear a question like this. The answer is, who sees the suffering? For whom is there suffering? This is why in my predicament, people say I've got Parkinson's disease. And they try to help me with remedies. And I have to bite my lip to keep from laughing. Because I see perfection. Perfection is all there is. Oneness. Ultimate reality. there's nothing else. But you say, but I see these people suffering. Do my eyes deceive me? And then I answer, the sky is blue. When somebody takes me outside and they say, Robbie, look at the beautiful blue sky. So I agree. But I know in reality there's no sky and there's no blue. It just doesn't exist. It's an optical illusion. A mirage in the desert. There appears to be an oasis of water. But when you get closer, there's only sand. It's the same thing. Your eyes deceive you. Your senses deceive you. Things are not like they appear. All is well. And everything's unfolding as it should. There are no mistakes. No mistakes have been made. No mistakes are being made. And no mistakes will ever be made. Everything is perfect, just the way it is. Consequently, when you see a condition, before you judge, you have to ask yourself, who sees that condition? For whom is that condition? For instance, let's take a simple example. If we all looked at this room, and I asked you, what is your impression of this room? One person will say, oh, I think it's lovely. Another person will say, I hate it. Another person will say, it's too small. Somebody else will say, it's too big. Somebody else will say, it's very clean. Somebody else will say, it's very dirty. That's how it is. You're seeing yourself. You're seeing nothing but yourself. The world is a reflection of your mind. The universe is an emanation of yourself. If you didn't exist, there would be no universe. The universe exists because you exist. You are the universe. And that's true of every so-called fact in your life. It's a fact that someone is dying, and someone dies. That's a fact, but it's not the truth. The truth is, we are all unborn. No one was ever born. If no one was ever born, how can you die? No one is born, no one dies. Again, I'm expressing my confession. That's how it appears to me. That's what I mean when I say this teaching is useless to most people. Because you can't do anything with it. Yet things happen. Lives improve. Spirituality grows. Happiness ensues. Bliss comes. It all happens spontaneously, just by being present. And this is what satsang is all about. By being present, without taking thought, without manipulation, without playing mind games, without trying to improve yourself, without thinking of yourself, without thinking of others, everything good happens, all by itself. Why? Because emptiness is goodness. Nirvana is absolute reality. The unborn is the self. And you are that. What else can I say? So what do you think about this? I'm open to questions.
The hill that Ramana Maharshi spent his life on, the top, what function did that play in his mind? And what function does the natural areas, the harmonies that are found in the balanced ecosystems?
It's important for some people. I went to Chela for some reason. It had a tremendous impact in Ramana's life. I went to Chela is another name for Shiva. And Ramana's family, his ancestors, we're all worshippers of Shiva. So the hill called Ramana at an early age. Some mysterious power led him to the hill. That was his experience. There have been others who walked around the hill and felt absolutely nothing. It was meaningless for them. The same is true of the other places you were speaking of. For most people, they mean nothing. You know what happens to most people, especially in the West? They imagine they're feeling something. It's a mind game. It's just like the healing shrines. You work yourself up into a frenzy. And you can't wait to get to this healing shrine. So naturally when you go there, you experience the healing. It's not the shrine that it's yourself. Because you work yourself up into a frenzy. It is your mind that caused it. And I'll relate a true story that happened in this way. In Italy, in a little town, there was a healing shrine. People used to come from all over the world, and they would climb the steps and get on their knees, and hundreds and thousands of people were actually healed from all kinds of diseases. Now, the fathers of the town found out from some scientists that there was going to be an earthquake in that town. This article was in Time magazine in about 1967. So what the fathers decided to do is to move the remains of the saint who was buried underneath the shrine to the other part of town where there was no earthquake. They began to dig, and lo and behold, no saint was ever buried there. There was nothing. They built the shrine upon nothing. What did the healing? How come all these thousands of people were healed? It's all in the mind. When you psych yourself out mentally, you can accomplish almost anything. So again, to answer your question, most of these things are meaningless. Arunachala meant a great deal to myself. I've had experiences inside Arunachala. But to most people, it's just a hill. So again, the answer is this. Work on yourself. Worship yourself. Find yourself. Find out who you are. And when you do this, everything becomes holy. And like Moses said, the ground upon which I stand is holy ground. Everything becomes holy. Not only certain places, but everything. And that's only because you have become that yourself. Your omnipresence makes it holy. You have become one with all there is. And you can truthfully say, all this is the self, and I am that. Does that make any sense? Okay.
In what sense is the spirit of the whole earth our mother?
Our brother?
Our mother. As giving us birth to another state of being.
The earth has no power without you. You are the power. And the earth is within yourself. So when you become powerful, the earth has power. When you are weak, the earth is weak. The earth, like the universe, is an emanation of yourself. The mother, the father, it's all within you. Everything is within yourself. There's no power outside of yourself. When you see some power happening from someplace, it's because collectively, people are giving it their power. But the people are the power. They misunderstand. They think the thing has power by itself. Nothing exists except yourself. Nothing exists because everything changes. Nothing is ever the same. What changes cannot be real. Take your body, for instance. You didn't always look this way. When you were conceived, you were no larger than the size of a pinhead. That was you. And then you became a little baby, a teenager, an adult. And now here you are. So you were never the same as you were years ago. This is true of everything. This chair used to be a piece of wood, a tree. Now it's become a chair. Everything comes from the same source, nothing. Nothing exists except the self. Everything is like a dream. When you have a dream, you dream you're flying an airplane, you're going to China and to Japan, and you come back here and you go to sleep. And then you wake up, it was a dream. This life is also like a dream. One day you will awaken and realize who you are. And you'll realize there's no power outside of yourself. And even there's no power within yourself. No power exists. Only the self exists. Nothing else is necessary. So we make up all these games. They're all mind games. They do not lead us to self-realization. They lead us to further delusion. That's why we're born again and again and again until we wake up. And then reincarnation stops. And we become totally liberated and free. Which we already are.
When you go out, I do not enjoy the blue sky. Do you see the blue sky, or does it make any difference?
I see the blue. No, I see the blue sky, but I see myself as the blue sky.
Do you enjoy it?
Sure, I enjoy myself. I always enjoy myself, 24 hours a day.
I ask him the same thing as what about chocolate and sunsets, you know, and if you are the sunset, it's in your head. That's after the ego dissolves, then you're able to
realize the ego. See, let's imagine you believe you're enjoying the blue sky. In the next moment, there's thunderstorms, lightning, and you become frightened and you cry. What happens to your enjoyment? When you realize that you are the self, blue skies, thunderstorms, they're both the same. Nothing can hurt you. There's no one left to enjoy. You just are these things. You are bliss. You have become Satchitananda. Being, knowledge, and bliss. That's the true nature. This is why, as I said in the beginning, these words are meaningless unless you've experienced that. Otherwise, it don't mean anything.
Yeah, he's kind of lost in
here. Most people like to go to classes where the teacher chants mantras and gives you relative knowledge and tells you how to improve your finances and your health and your lifestyle. Those people draw thousands of followers. But of course these things don't exist. They exist for a while. You get a good feeling. You improve your life for a while. But you have to go on with your life, and soon you die. And then where are you? Nowhere.
That's why I was going to FRF, and I like it, and it gives me a good feeling. There's always something missing.
It's all good when you need it. Nothing is wrong with anything.
Well, I can still go and still get the good feelings and do the chanting and all that, but I feel like there's something more. I mean, like there, you know, I can't stop there.
Then you'll go onward.
Pardon?
you will go on with wherever you have to go.
You look at discipline, and sometimes you had those increase of 5 times or whatever. Sometimes I get the feeling that, you know, I'm just not very disciplined, so I need to go to some place like that so I can get disciplined. You know, like, I don't have enough of that.
As I said before, this path is sometimes a contradiction. Because it is true, you need discipline, and then again, you don't need discipline. There's a time when you do, and there's a time when you don't. But if you follow the principles involved by asking yourself, who is it that needs the discipline? You will realize that your true self never needed discipline, but your ego does. And since you are not the ego, there's no one left for discipline. It all evens itself out.
When you refer to discipline, what do you mean? What would be your definition?
Well, I mean not being rude to other people, not being obnoxious, being kind and loving, putting other people first, having compassion, helping others.
So you're not talking about meditation or monotheism? That's what I was referring to, feeling like I'm not, I change, I do a little bit of this, and I do a little bit of that, and I sometimes feel like I'm a butterfly.
Well, meditation and mantras are good, but they're only to make you one-pointed, to make the mind one-pointed. So you can disintegrate the mind.
So it is important then, even now, to do meditation.
It's important for some people. Again, if you can make your mind quiet, then it's unnecessary. But all the spiritual disciplines that you're referring to are only to quiet the mind. When the mind is quiet, everything happens by itself. When the mind is noisy, the world becomes real and terrible for you. Therefore, mantras quiet the mind. Meditation quiets the mind. Everything leads to quieting the mind.
Watching the breath.
To quiet the mind.
So you don't need any specific thing or fixed time or call of the mind to.
Yet there are some people who do need that kind of discipline. Because that's the way they are in this life.
It's all karmic.
It's all karmic. Your heart will tell you. What feels good. What feels right.
I'm way out here on the freeway today. I did that. To whom did this, you know, whatever the state was, or. And it's like I did it all the way out here, and I was just real calm. You know, even if I thought of, like, rushing, who did this idea of time come, you know? And it just, that, I mean, the mind was going the whole time asking those questions. But yet, even though that it was, I didn't feel rattled or ruffled because I didn't get identified with any of the things that came up.
It's a great psychotherapy.
That's all it is, though.
No, it's the highest.
No, it is self-inquiry. Yeah,
but it kept coming. But in between, there was some quiet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because as soon as something would come up, the question would be there, you know, to cancel out any imaginings that go with it once you start thinking about time and the traffic and, the, you know, how the mind goes. So it just stopped. And then another thing, it was totally maybe unrelated, but every time I did that, and I could see there was some kind of, I don't know.
As you keep that momentum up, you'll be surprised what happens.
I thought, well, if you could do this all the time, it would dissolve.
You have to catch yourself. Whenever thoughts come to you, you simply ask yourself, So how do these thoughts come?
It sounds like what Sue was doing.
What it was.
And that is self-inquiry.
Even if they were good things. I mean, I did it, you know. And it made those, okay, you know, I don't know how to say it. But it's,
I understand. You're doing well. That's good.
And I thought, gee, if I could do that all the time, you know, it would be.
And ask yourself, who needs to do it all the time? When you do it often enough, it will begin to do you.
Yeah, there was a point where I felt like it was kind of doing me after a while. It didn't feel uncomfortable. It felt very natural. Very natural place to be.
It seems to detach you a little bit. So it you does, don't feel yeah. personally oh, yeah. involved, which is great.
Just doing that is sufficient for most people. Just doing what you're doing is sufficient for most people.
But can you ask too many questions like that?
No, if you want to go deeper, you usually go deeper with that. But don't do this when you're driving your car.
No. I didn't do who am I.
When you do yes, when you're driving your car, what you do is sufficient. But when you get home, then you can do it differently. You can ask yourself, for instance, if you're feeling depressed, to whom does this come? And then you realize it comes to you. So you say, it comes to me, I feel this. I feel depressed, I feel terrible. Then you ask yourself, who is this I? From where does this I come that feels terrible? But don't answer. Just follow it. Follow the eye to its source. And you will realize that all of life, the relative world, is attached to I. And when the I is dissolved, everything else is dissolved with it. It happens by itself. You simply go deeper with the eye. Deep, deep, deep. From where comes this eye? Where does this eye come from? Or who am I? Whatever feels good for you. And you will realize that the eye comes from nowhere. It doesn't exist. It never did exist. You are free. You are bright and shining. You are the one.
You're not going to sit and just contemplate your navel all day after. You're still going to do your activities and all that kind of.
Of course you are. You'll even do your activities better than you ever did before.
What was it? I sometimes feel like when I've got into yoga or something, I feel myself withdrawing or becoming.
You're having the wrong experience. The right way is to let your body do whatever it has to do. Your body came to this earth for a purpose. So it appears. And your body's going to do whatever it came here to do. But it has nothing to do with you.
So that's what you mean when you say that we are not the doer?
Exactly. You don't have to concern yourself about work or non-work. Whatever you're supposed to do, you're going to do. It's all preordained. Just be happy.
What about when your money runs out, though, and you're not able to work?
Why do you believe this will happen? So you're giving it strength.
Yeah.
You're thinking mentally that this may happen.
And yeah, because it's real close right now. It appears to
well, and thinking mentally about this makes it stronger. The more you worry about this, the stronger it becomes. But if you push that thought away out of your mind, your omnipresence will come forth.
Well, what if you say, to whom does this thought come, to whom does this fear come?
You can do that then, yes.
Because the answer would be the ego, which you mean, and then you carry it to the next step, which is
yes.
A fear of poverty is only because the ego that's afraid that it's poor.
Of course. Remember, the trees do not lack for leaves, nor do the flowers fail to bloom. Everything is beautiful, and so are you. You can never experience lack, except mentally. Have faith. Trust yourself. And trust the power that knows the way, which is within you. Everything will be okay.
Well, when you say everything is predestined, then at least on the earth plane, might you not be predestined to be poor or rich, and couldn't you still look with the same detachment on that?
Well, but for whom is there poor or rich? Who has to look with detachment? It's back to the ego again. Yeah.
See, the more afraid you are of being poor, the stronger the ego is. For the self, wealth and poverty are the same.
Mm-hmm.
So the more fear you have, the further away you are going from yourself. And, as the Lord said, it's pure gain. So worrying about it is not really altered. Not that you should not do anything about it, but realize who you are, who is rich and who is poor. When you reach a peace, it is beyond wealth and poverty. So, whenever there's a fear of poverty, that's only the ego. And when there's the self, you're always rich. You know, the biblical saying, consider the lilies of the field. And that's what that says. Why worry about clothing? Why? But of course, who can do that? But that's
the truth is, you can never suffer. Never. If you flow with the Dharma, you can never suffer. It's impossible.
But if you seem to be, then that's the ego suffering.
The ego suffering. You've got to work on yourself. If you change conditions, it's all good. As an example, if you think that your husband is giving you a hard time and he's unemployed and he can't support you, so you say, I'll trade him in for another husband. But then when you get the other husband, you've got other problems because you're not resolved it in your own mind. It has to start and end with you. You can't change outside conditions. It only appears for a while that you can, but it always comes back again. The chickens always come home to roost. So wherever you go, wherever you run, you have to take yourself with you. And if you've got a poverty consciousness, wherever you go, you're going to experience poverty. So don't change anything, but work on yourself and see who you really are and what you really are. You'll never have to be concerned about poverty again.
It's like Jesus said, when you seek the first the kingdom of God and all the things of your life, it doesn't mean you don't do anything, but it's be like you're driving, it's just continuing on your life and state because you've let go.
Well, because I haven't worked yet, and I've gotten disability and that's running out, so I'm trying. Now I'm going, well, should I use the mind thing of picturing myself healthy and able to work and all this business? That's just as down really to do that as another way that it's just temporary. Yes. I'm saying, okay, I'm going to picture myself well, and I'm going to picture myself doing such and such.
The best you can do is to make yourself happy. That happiness will take care of everything else. Really be happy from the depths of your soul. Do not look at the conditions. Conditions change. But make yourself real happy because you're you. Not because you have something, but because you're you. Happiness has nothing to do with person, places, or things. Happiness is a state of mind. If you can be happy, it'll change everything in your life.
If you don't turn a switch, it's by something fire.
Yes. But forget about the switch. Be yourself. And you'll know what to do. You did not come to this earth to suffer. You came here to find yourself and to be happy. And a big income to think we're prosperous. It's wrong. Our values are completely warped.
The yuppies say whoever has the most toys when he dies wins. But that's so ironic even in itself, because if you're dead, what does it matter?
See, poverty or prosperity are secondary. The first thing is to find yourself. That's why you came to this earth. Everything else will take care of itself.
I've been in both places. I mean, I don't think I've ever had true poverty, okay, but I've had big houses and cars and all that whole stuff, and then I've had where I have just enough to meet my needs. And either one's okay, I feel. In fact, I feel less burdened kind of meeting my needs. The health insurance, right? Those roll off the topic, but health insurance, isn't that a fear thing?
Of course.
Do we get it anyway because we live in this?
If you need it.
If you need it. I've used it a lot this year. Some years I never used it at all. But, you know, I have a roof over my head. I have food to eat. The things that I need money for really are my phone, my health insurance, and car insurance. And if I need to buy a pair of clothes, you know, a pair of pants once in a while. I don't really need a lot.
Well, sometimes I say to myself, and I think Robert taught me this, that at any given moment, you have everything you need. Like at any, just stop in the middle of any second.
Well, I know, right now.
Right now. Are you hungry?
No.
Are you,
no.
You know, are
the
you
insurance is paid.
Yeah.
And, I go back on this health insurance business. I'm going, I don't know about buying this. You know, I mean, I have used it, but there's something about it that
it's betting against yourself.
It is.
Any type of insurance.
Well, by law, we have to have now certainly not for car insurance.
You have to do what you have to do.
Maybe she was led to have it for this need now. Maybe
Take this body as an example. I own nothing.
You own nothing?
I own nothing.
Okay.
There's nothing I own. But I've got everything. I have nothing, but I have everything.
But you're so much advanced, more advanced.
Well, I don't know about that. Except I have no needs. I live in a good place. I eat properly. But I own nothing. I'm just there.
I don't own anything either.
I have no insurance.
Oh, yeah, I got that. Yeah. I have a car, a use of a car, but I don't really own the car. And I don't own the house that I live in. I don't think anybody
here does. The way I feel about insurance, this may be stupid, earthquake reaction, but it kind of ties in. You said the odds are for the house. The odds are just like Vegas. These companies wouldn't stay in business if they don't make the money.
I don't think they'll probably reinsure me after this year. You know, I mean, why would they?
They're losing on you. Or they'll raise the rates, so they won't lose.
But you got to be very careful when you talk about these things. No, I mean, if you don't have the consciousness, you can cause a lot of problems for yourself. I remember many years ago we had a class about something like this. And I used to talk about when I lived in Hawaii. And I used to talk about the fact that I never locked my car. And nothing's ever been stolen. Because I never thought that I needed to lock my car. So I never did. I apparently said the wrong thing to somebody. Because there was one person in the class, he always locked his car and he didn't trust anybody. When he heard me talk about this, he said he was going to do the same thing. He was a shirt salesman. In the back of his car he had samples of about 20 different shirts. And the one time he didn't lock his car, somebody stole all the shirts out of his car. So I said, I didn't tell you not to lock your car. I said, I don't lock my car. But you have to do what you have to do. Until the time comes that you don't have to do it anymore. Everybody's different.
Well, that's what I meant about you being more advanced.
I don't think I'm more advanced. It just happens like that.
He feels comfortable with that. He has no fear about it.
I don't even think about it.
The same would be with insurance. If I still think about it, then I probably better just get it.
That's right.
But that, this buying it, doesn't make you get sick, though, necessarily.
No, why should it make you get sick? Unless you think you've got to get sick so you can use it.
No, because there's been lots of times I've had it and didn't even know I had it and I didn't use it.
Some people think they're paying for nothing. They say, why don't I get sick? I've got to use my insurance.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I don't care if I use it. I'll donate the money.
Yeah, just take part. Thanks for the juice,
Ben.
That's refreshing.
More?
No, I'm okay.
Do you need more juice? Barbara, I have a couple of questions.
No. I consider Ramana as myself. I look at him as more than a guru. I look at him as the universe, as life itself, which is none other than myself. So he is simply another aspect of me. When I was with him, I paid him homage because he was myself. So I was paying myself homage. Do you follow that? I treat him as I would treat myself. When I came, I brought food, I brought flowers because I am the flowers and I am the food. It's all one. But the actual word guru means teacher. And Ramana was no one's teacher. He was simply doing the same thing I do. He was confessing the truth about himself. And the people who wanted to sit around were welcome. He didn't care. In other words, he never said, I am a teacher, these are students. He looked at everyone as himself. And he just went on with his daily activities, and people just sat all around him. When he would go to sleep on the couch, the whole auditorium, they would go to sleep on the floor.
Well, say for instance, some people will read some books by Ramana and will relate to what he's saying, and they'll say that, well, Ramana is my guru.
Well, it can't hurt.
In the sense of master teacher.
It can't hurt.
I think if you're reading a book by Ramana, it can't hurt.
He did really write.
Sure, well.
He just wrote some verses. But the mistake most people make about that is there's too much separation. And as long as there's separation, there's going to be trouble. Because if you fall in love with a guru, the first mistake the guru makes, so it appears, then you hate him. Because physical love is the other side of the coin of hate. But when you look at the guru as not being a person, but being yourself, that's different. When you look at a guru as not being a person, but being yourself, that's a completely different story. It's a mistake. You make a mistake according to your thinking.
Which doesn't mean they're really ladies.
See, because you give them your own...
Your ego
that... Yes, I was just going to say that. You want God to live up to your expectations.
That's your ego wanting your
yes.
Ego.
In other words, you're creating God in your image. So you expect the guru to do this as an example. Say you're celibate. So of course you're going to expect your guru to be celibate. Say you live in a cave. So you want your guru to live in a cave also. And if he lives in a house, you'll say, that's not a guru because he lives in a house. You should live in a cave. See, we give all our expectations to the guru.
Don't we do that to God?
To God, same thing.
As a philosophizer.
Exactly. But the true way is to totally surrender to yourself. Then you will be led to the true Sadguru, which is none other than yourself. And there will be harmony. Because then you couldn't care less what the guru does. Because the guru is yourself.
Robert, doesn't that also happen in personal relationships? Rather than love the guru, you have that love in your personal relationship, and you have expectations in that.
Yes.
And then you get let down.
Of course.
Not any different.
Of course.
I think most people fall in love with the image of the other person that they love. And what usually happens in relationships is that neither person can live up to the image the other has created for them.
Expect nothing, you'll never be disappointed.
Mm-hmm. And should you also see the other person in relation to yourself?
Yes, you should. You simply realize there's one self, and that self is me. So you and I are one. Therefore, whatever you do to me, I can't be mad at you.
How do you do that? Were you going to ask that?
By working on yourself.
By self-inquiry.
Through self-inquiry. Through mind control.
Would you ask yourself who feels hurt?
You can ask yourself who feels hurt. Who's saying all these things? To whom did these feelings come?
For me, you mentioned that rather than changing the situation, you have to change yourself because you're of ego.
You have to bring yourself with them.
And so that brings in the same relationship.
Same thing as that. Well, you have to draw a line someplace, sometime. It depends on your advancement and your maturity. If you're living with a person that you can't get along with, and you want to develop yourself, and you can't be in those circumstances, then you should change them. But if you're not working on yourself, if you change your circumstances, they'll pop up somewhere else.
But there's lots of relationships where one person may be working on it, but the other person could care less about what that is.
Yes.
And they can get along. Is that not true?
Well. But as you work on yourself, you will know what to do. For instance, if someone comes to me and they say, I want your car. That's not strange to me.
Want your car?
They want my car. If I feel in the mood to give it to them, I'll say, take it. If I don't, I'll say no. I forget all about it. But I won't think about it. I won't get caught up in the struggle. Why does she want my car? What is he going to do with my car? I don't think that way. I'll say, you want to take it? If I don't think so, I'll say, no, I can't give it to you. That's the end of that. There's nothing to think about. There's nothing to worry about. I once had a beautiful ring, and somebody really liked it, so I took it off and I gave it to them. Because I'm not attached. What's rightfully mine can never be taken away, and that's myself. Everything else comes and goes. You don't get attached, but you have a loving feeling, a kind feeling.
So how would you do it?
But being attached means you own them. It's like you own the person, and they have to do what you want. That's attachment.
Can it be the other way around, if they own me?
Yes, it can. Same thing. But if you're free, then you love them. But you don't let them walk all over you. But you still love them. You do what is necessary.
That's like that story of the man with the dream with the sons.
Something like that. Now, I don't mean to make this cold and calculating. I mean, I love you more than anybody else can ever love you in your life. And you don't know that. But I'm not attached. Do you see the difference?
Like if you never saw it, you never wouldn't make any difference.
And yet I give up my life for you. Can you follow?
I'm not in that place, but I understand.
You are me. We're one. and I could do nothing but love you.
Well, I don't know
that
I could
give
up my life.
Because
I
have no life.
Oh.
Whose life are you giving up? There's nothing to give up.
So that's why you could do it.
Well, how do you deal with emotions?
You ask yourself, to whom do they come?
Yeah, because, like, why are they there?
They're not. You think of them. It's like hypnosis. You've been brought up in a way to have emotions. They don't really exist. So when you ask yourself, to whom do they come, they'll disappear.
Emotions come from thinking, right? And thinking comes from the ego.
Yes. But then again, you can say, well, I like to have good emotions. I don't want to get rid of all my emotions. That's hard to explain. But when you're empty, you've got love and bliss and joy. And you have those feelings toward everything. So you don't need those emotions you're talking about. Those are from the mind.
So there is no
You simply ask yourself, how do they come?
Do they
not mean? Oh yes. But you have to mean what you're saying.
And you have to do it continually.
Yes.
Because I'm so programmed in the other
way. It's not mechanical. It's not a mind.
How can you keep that? How can you keep that from becoming
mechanical is to whom do they come, to whom do they come, to whom do they come, to whom do they come. But when you truly ask, to whom do these come?
When you ask from your heart instead of your head.
Yeah, it's almost like you can kind of feel it.
Sure you can.
Well, one, you're truly asking, and the other, you're just...
With the mind
sense. It's just, you're not asking at all.
That's how, like, affirmations become, you know, and just getting a handful. I mean, the other night, I have to find a passage or something, and I felt really okay. I wanted to find something so hard, so much sleep that I can kind of calm down. But there was nothing that soothed me. I mean, everything that I picked up or read that's helped me in the past, it meant nothing.
I'll tell you what affirmations do. Say you have to catch a plane, and you're late. So you affirm to yourself, I will catch this plane. It will wait for me. I'm going to catch this plane. So you go to the airport, and the plane is late. And you catch the plane, you say, boy, the affirmations work. Then the plane crashes. So forget about affirmations.
Be careful what you ask for.
You're good. Mm-hmm.
That's the thing about healthy, you know, and you can wish for that or wish for...
See, that's funny to me. You know why? Because when you wish for health, it means you've got a disease.
That's affirmation of disease.
So you're affirming the disease is getting bigger all the time. Because you say, I wish I was healthy. I wish I was healthy. I'm going to be healthier and healthier every day. That means you're sicker and sicker every day so you can be healthier and healthier.
Well, how do they explain that? A psychologist or Emil Kuhl?
Emil Kuhl.
Yeah, and he had this every day.
Day by day and every way.
I'm feeling better and better. And
that helps to an extent.
For a period of time. But if you don't resolve it from the top, it's always going to be coming back and it's going to be the two-sided coin.
Yes, those things are for neurotic people. All these affirmations, I'm getting better, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. Forget about it. There's nobody to get better because nobody is sick.
There's no betterness.
Isn't there the other aspect?
satisfaction,
mm.
which is being part of the creative process of manifesting the I Am.
Mm.
And aren't there two directions to go, the inner searching, the questioning dilemma? And then the result of that, the gift from that question, the answer to that question, I am this. And so do we not have a responsibility to create the self?
No.
To manifest the self?
The self does not have to be, no. Because who is manifesting the self? In reality, only the self exists.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody needs to manifest it. It's like asking God to manifest God. You already exist as the self.
But aren't we creators? We have a mind that wants to create.
The mind is the creator.
Mm-hmm.
It's the mind and the ego.
Well, when the mind merges with the heart, though, okay, when you get to that point, is that what you're speaking of, John, when you get to that point when the mind merges with the heart?
Everything the mind creates, it creates problems.
But I think I know what you're talking about, because Joel goes through.
So the mind is not in
you?
Yes.
Is music a problem, or art?
Art and music are part of the material world. Do you have a higher state? You're in a higher consciousness.
The highest consciousness?
No, higher.
Higher?
But they're still part of the relative world. When you are yourself, you are music. So you don't have to create music.
But I think what John is talking about is like what Joel Goldsmith teaches, who is one of Robert's teachers, where he said, there's no one to ask for abundance. Because you are abundance. Mm. Abundance is not its manifestation. Abundance is not the Cadillac and the swimming pool.
Mm-hmm.
You are abundance, and those are simply manifestations of your abundance.
Mm-hmm.
Is that healthy?
Well, what makes so much sense to me with your self-inquiring is that the answer to the question is not an affirmation. It isn't I am this, I am that. In asking, who am I, the answer can happen naturally.
Yes.
Instead of a forced, instead of a conditioned answer, who we believe we are.
Oh, right, because you're not even supposed to answer as well, because you just wait for an answer, and the answer will ultimately come to you.
Right, but there is that aspect of the process. There is the, all I can do is ask, right, who am I? But there's also, the answer is happening too, right? And isn't that the creativity that we...
It's not really creativity. See, the answer already exists by itself.
Uh-huh.
And by inquiring, you're opening yourself up for the answer. But the answer is already there.
Oh, I see.
So there's no one needed to create anything.
But aren't we also opening up our bodies, our ego, our feelings, and our minds, which have been in the past closed? Are we then not opening that up to the answer, so that it can then express through our hands?
You can call it opening up.
Mm-hmm.
But those things that you mentioned do not exist. Therefore, when you open up, you just become. But you don't have to go through the process that you're talking about. You simply ask a question, and the answer comes by itself. It's like being in a room of darkness. To get to the light, you don't have to go through a series of processes. You just turn on the switch,
mm-hmm.
and the light exists. It's the same thing. You don't have to create the light. You don't have to pray for the light. You don't have to make something so the light will come. You simply turn on the switch.
Mm-hmm.
And it was there all the time.
Right.
So by asking the question, that's the switch.
But if we stop asking, then the light goes out again.
You get caught in the world. You get caught up in the world.
Yeah.
Also, I've got an impression, tell me if I'm wrong, that the answer doesn't always come to you, and that's why we keep having to do something. When it comes, isn't that your awakening?
Yes, it's like the sun in the clouds.
Different kind of words.
No, it's like the sun in the clouds. The sun is always shining. It never goes away. But sometimes clouds block it. So it's an ignorant person that says there's no sun. What do I have to do to make the sun come out? So I'll climb up on the ladder and push the clouds out of the way. Or shall I get a wind machine and blow the clouds away? The clouds are always there because of ignorance. But when the clouds dissipate, the sun shines once again.
But it never stops.
It never stops. The light within us is always bright and shining. But we cover it up with ego and mind. So when the ego and mind is removed, we shine once again all our splendor, like we're supposed to.
Are the ego and the mind the same thing? Or?
Just about. The mind actually creates the ego. But those are just terms.
So if you get rid of the ego, you get rid of the mind, and yes, vice versa.
If you follow the eye to its culmination, they both go.
Oh, that's right, because you said the mind is the projector and the ego is the screen.
Yes.
I can see that the highest aspect of the arts, from the audience point of view, is a tool to draw someone into reality. Into
that's true. True.
Like the Buddhist mandala. But I know that if without the mask of my ego, I don't have a perspective to create something.
How do you know?
Because I've been through that in my earlier years of realizing that I have talent in a certain area, such as theater. I also felt lost because I didn't have a perspective. I didn't know what I wanted to communicate.
But you're still talking in egoic terms. Because the ego is lost. The ego felt lost.
Isn't there a positive aspect to the ego as far as being a mask of God?
It appears like this. If you want to get caught up in the dance of life, then you do those things you're talking about. That's true.
Can we not wear the mask and be aware that it is the mask and see that there's a function for it in everyday life?
If you want to, it will still pull you back into earth again.
Uh-huh.
Because you're attached to something. To become totally free, you have to be unattached to everything. That doesn't mean you won't do it. You can become a great artist and not be attached. And you do beautiful artwork. So you can do whatever you like. Just don't be attached. Realize that you are not the doer.
Is there a certain amount of attachment that a bodhisattva has to take on?
No.
In order to survive in the world?
No. Your body will take care of itself. There's a power that runs the universe, and it takes care of bodies. But you are not the body. So you work on yourself, and your body will take care of itself. And it'll do whatever it came here to do.
Whether it's theater or
whether it's not, whether it's nothing. Whatever you came here to do, you're going to do. But you have nothing to do with it.
Well, how do you know if you've done it already?
You don't have to know. Something does know. And something will lead you and guide you. But don't be attached to your body.
Mm-hmm. To your body?
Yes. You will be guided. You will be directed in the right way. There's nothing to worry about. If you came here to be a nurse, no matter how you try not to be a nurse, you're going to be a nurse. Nothing can stop you, no matter what you do.
Because of predestination.
Yes.
And calling.
You have to be willing to give up any desire, or that you don't even have to do that.
Just will not be attached to it.
Did you say that's because friends are really nice?
No, he didn't tell me anything.
He
just came out.
Because I have an
SEC. Oh, yeah. I don't think he did,
you? I don't think so. You didn't even know she was here.
No. I didn't even know you had a sister.
No. In the younger years of life, isn't there a function that what I want to be is ego, then, isn't it? But isn't there a certain amount of that that's necessary to get us through school and so that the training can happen? Because if we decide before we've gone through that we are God and that's what we want to be, then maybe then we won't feel we have to go through the education and the process of becoming.
If you realize, it all depends on what your body came here to do. Some people go to school, some don't. Everybody's different. But it doesn't matter. See, we get caught up with all these thoughts. Keep thinking about yourself. And everything will take care of itself.
Again, that's that feeling of feeling coming first, and all the things, whether there's blowing or whatever will be out, the things just come.
It's like we have to have something to throw into the fire to begin with. You know, doesn't it have to be something ego first in order to burn up?
The ego burns up last. It's like we have a fire with all of our thoughts and we get rid of everything. And the stick we use is the ego. And we have to throw on the stick also.
But I think he's asking if the ego is necessary up to a certain point.
Yeah.
The ego is it's never necessary.
So why does it exist then?
It doesn't. You think it does. That's because we're talking.
And because we're talking about the earth plane and the world of illusion.
Exactly.
It's all part of the dream.
You know, in the end, you don't even really have to ask questions. And the only reason why you ask me questions is so that you'll come to the realization that you don't have to ask questions. I have a question.
You don't have to ask me.
Well, Danny, you said, what did you say, the abundance of the Cadillac?
Oh, no, I said that abundance is not a Cadillac. I said abundance is within you. You are abundance. And the Cadillac was a Ferrari or whatever is a manifestation of abundance. But
how about the Volkswagen?
That too. You know, what I mean is you don't have to ask someone, yourself or God or anybody else, for abundance. It's not like he's going to have. Because you are abundance, and that realization will manifest these things. But the things are not abundance. I was trying to make distinction. Things are not abundance. You are abundance. Things will come later.
I had a question on consciousness. I suppose the question is, what is consciousness? And is consciousness the self? And the thing that brought the question on is I was thinking about the fourth state, the waking state, the dreaming state, the dreamless state. Now, in the dreamless state, is there consciousness? And from my experience, there is no consciousness. So I questioned, well, what is consciousness? And what is the self? And is the consciousness and self the same thing?
Consciousness is an aspect of the self. Consciousness is the creative principle
of the true self.
Of the true self. It's the next step before the true self. It's the creative principle that creates everything. Everything that appears created comes from consciousness. So in reality, you are consciousness.
Is consciousness the same as awareness?
That's another name for awareness. All these names are synonymous, really. Consciousness, awareness.
And the self is awareness.
The self, God. But yet there are also different aspects.
That always blows me away to think that one might be awareness itself. Very awareness, see what I mean?
Consciousness is like universal mind.
But is there consciousness in deep sleep?
Yes. There is, but you're not aware of it.
That's what I'm trying to get at. Because I remember reading that in the waking state, in the dreaming state, and in the dreamless state, there is still the self.
Mm.
Now, I can relate to the waking state, I can even relate to the dreaming state. But for me, the dreamless state is, before I go to bed, I'm awake, and then I go to sleep, and then I wake up, and the period between going to sleep and waking up is only 1 second. Although it was so many hours. So where is the consciousness or where is the self? And
the consciousness,
what is the difference between two?
Consciousness permeates everything. And when you are a yoni, you are aware of the dreamless state. You're in the dreamless state, but you're aware of it. The ordinary person is consciousness when they're asleep and dreamless sleep, and they're not aware of it. It's the only difference.
Oh, so it's just a matter of
levels.
Coming to that.
That's a matter of levels of enlightenment.
So Yanni is conscious during dreamless.
And Yanni is always in dreamless sleep, but is aware of it.
So even when he's asleep, he's conscious, he's aware.
Yes.
But the person that isn't a Yanni, when he's in deep sleep, isn't aware.
He's not aware.
Alright, here you go. It's difficult for me to comprehend awareness without subject-object, without something to be aware of.
Here's an example. You take a baby. The baby is asleep. But the mother gives the baby a bottle. And the baby sucks on the bottle. But is not aware of it. Of course, it's asleep, but it's sucking on the bottle. So in dreamless sleep, you're not aware of what you're doing, but you're pure consciousness. So when you become self-realized, you're pure consciousness, but you're aware of it. You're awake. That's the difference.
So basically, we're all asleep, and it's not until we become awake that we can be aware during dreamless sleep.
That's right.
What does the dream mean?
You don't know?
You have a dream and it's because it's something that you're conscious of. You know, when you go to bed at night, of course, you're not thinking of anything in particular, but then you have a dream about something and then you wake up.
Yes.
Why did I think about that? Why did I dream about that when I didn't think of it?
Dreams are part of the relative world. The relative world.
They
have to do with your experience. Part of it. They have to do with your experiences in life.
But what if you dream about something you've never seen?
You have something already.
Maybe
what if you dream about something that you
see? Dreams are simply images that come because of your past experiences. In other words, if you were brought up frightened and afraid of things, you will dream fearful dreams about things that never happened. But it'll be fearful. Because you're creating this in your dream mind.
But are you saying that they're part of like the earth plane existence? And
yes.
If you awaken, would you still dream if
you... You can't dream when you're awake. You can only dream when you're asleep.
So Yanni will never have dreams, right?
No, Yanni has dreams sometimes.
But he knows he has lucid dreams, and he knows he's dreaming when he's dreaming.
Yes. But the dreams are meaningless most of the time.
Dreams are meaningless?
Yes. Don't pay too much attention to dreams.
Why do you have them?
Because of your state of affairs. It vents emotions.
Okay.
It gets rid of temper tantrums, emotions.
So they have meaning in that sense, right? They might keep us from acting out some of these things and
yes.
During the day.
It's a release of energy.
But when you wake up and you have that, you know, dream that wasn't a present, you wake up and it affects your mood.
And change your mood.
Do you know what I mean? Like, is that possible to, is it just because you're dreaming that took you over? You know, if you have really good dreams, you're really happy, but if you have a dream about something that you didn't, you know, brought up.
Simply realize it's a dream and ask yourself why the dream. Again, it's your ego that dreams. It's your ego that dreams, not yourself.
How miniaturized is it a lot, doesn't it?
It brings it down. Yeah, it's the third person looking at it.
Mm-hmm. The observer.
Being involved in the subject
object. So you don't give too much power to dreams. A lot of people make a lot of things out of dreams.
I had a teacher who, she said it was through scripture if you interpreted it. You know, like you say the dreams and then she'd make it into a, whatever the dream was, it always was a good lesson and it always was.
That's like astrology. Right. And as long as you are on that plane, then that's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But after a while, I thought, well, this is just more intellectual.
But even in astrology, Shuriyani probably is not affected by that because he's beyond the self, beyond the body.
Because also he knows the planets and the stars are kind of the illusion.
Well, like so. Joy was saying, this is a path of discrimination. This is a path of jnana, path of knowledge. And in knowledge, you have to ask yourself, is your mind going to control you? Or can you control your mind?
Well, you can.